Hey, you guys, welcome to Mentally Chill. I'm your host, Kristen Carney. Thank you for joining the show. And this week, I tackle the awkward thing that I absolutely have not wanted to tackle because it's about sex. And I'm immature and from a very conservative family, so I hate thinking my mom is listening to this, although I am pretty lucky because I come from parents that can't operate too much technology in 2018, so I have that going for me for sure. So I don't think she's gonna find it. But if she does, mom, stop listening from this point forward. Just to anything in 2018, just stop listening. You'll be better off. So anyway, I have Sex with Emily on the show, and she has an awesome podcast and has been talking about sex for a really long time. She's a doctor. She knows her shit. Good thing my mom stopped listening a few seconds ago because I just said the word shit. So you guys know if I'm worried about the word shit, I'm definitely worried about the word boner. Anyway, just a warning for what's coming ahead. And before we get to anything to do with boners, you guys know the routine. I have to say thank you to everyone on Patreon. Thank you specifically this week to John, Lucy, and Brett. Thank you guys for being my hero and for joining the community. If you guys have joined Patreon and you haven't really heard much from me, check your email. There's an email for you from Patreon giving you some directions on how to retrieve your perks. So make sure you check that and pop me an email at contact@mentallychillpodcast.com to get the ball rolling there. But the last thing I will say, a mini warning about this episode. I got new microphones, which I'm so excited about because I had this awesome setup with mic stands and these wonderful microphones, but I'm mobile when I tape, so I'm never in one spot. So setting up the mic stands was, talk about first world problems. I was like, oh, these mic stands are driving me crazy. They're so high tech and so great. But it was hard to transport them all over the place, and I got cut by one a couple times, and they're really heavy. So I ended up finally getting handheld microphones, thanks to Patreon. However, my headphones shit the bed right when I got these new microphones, and so I couldn't hear the volume level, so I'm pretty loud, and Emily's not as loud, and if I had known I could plug my headphone into the thingy I was recording into, I probably wouldn't have had this problem. Part of me wanted to redo this episode, but I guess I don't want to waste Emily's time, and I think it's not that bad. But anyway, my apologies. I'm getting used to these new microphones and fixing the headphone situation. So just know that going into it. But we're talking about depression and sex, so who cares if the volume's wrong? The show's right. Right? Okay. So I hope you guys enjoy the episode. So I've been dreading this episode, actually, not because of you, but because I am so awkward sexually that I've been wanting to talk about this for so long. And it's been, so I have a chalkboard in my room and it's got like everything that I need to do. And you have been sitting up on my chalkboard for probably 4 months.
Okay.
And I'm like, just write to her. But I know for me, sex stuff, I get so, I revert to like a 12-year-old,
right?
Which is weird because I do the show with Marnie, which is all about dating, and right, that sometimes can branch into sex. So I've been really like psyching myself either out or up to talk about this, especially because I saw you had your mom on the show.
Yep.
And I was like, that is so amazing because my mom, if we ever even mentioned that either of us have a vagina,
right,
it would be the weirdest conversation of all time.
Right. And vaginaless females.
We are. We're mannequins.
That's how most families are. Yeah. Most people don't talk about sex with their families. My mom was a little more open, but yeah, that's very rare.
How did you get into the whole sex thing?
I got into the whole sex thing because I wasn't having the best sex of my life. And I realized that when people would walk around saying like, last night I had the best sex of my life, I was just like, back up. What do you mean by amazing sex? What do you mean by the best sex? Like,
yeah,
I've had good sex and even great sex, but I feel like there's something more to sex than I haven't experienced yet. And so people were like, I'm like, was his penis double jointed? Did you see the rafters? Like, what does that mean? And I'm like, I have not had that. So really it started out like 13 years ago from this place of how do you have amazing sex? And I was also a late bloomer sexually. Like, even though my mom talks about it now, she was like, when I was 15, she said, ask me questions. And I was like, well, I know you're going to have sex, ask me questions. I was like, I don't know what questions are going to be. So it was always like this thing of me trying to figure it out sexually and then not having great sex when I was younger, not knowing about an orgasm until I was 20 when I was like, okay, friends. I was like with some friends in college. I was like, you guys, quick question. My boyfriend's, I've been dating him for 2 years. He comes in from Michigan State. I was at Michigan. He's pounding away at me and then he leaves. That's not interesting to me. That's not great sex. Right.
Like, why do you guys like sex? I don't get it.
I don't get it. Yeah. Why do you like sex?
Yeah.
And they're like, orgasm. So cut to like the podcast 10 years later when I was like still walking around going, I was, you know, at the time a documentary filmmaker. And I was like, I just want to talk to you about sex because I feel like everything I've learned about sex, I've learned from my friends and talking and women were so open sharing things. And so that's why I got into it.
So you didn't think there was really like a portal for especially for women to maybe go and learn.
Right. No, think about it. We don't talk to our moms, most people. We don't – now I talk to her more because she can't help it, but I can't help but ask her. We don't talk to our doctors. Like, girl, we don't feel comfortable talking to our doctor about sex. Yeah. We don't feel comfortable talking to our partners about sex.
And it's so different with women because, like, for dudes, they don't really need to talk about it because they boom, 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 they hit whatever, and they realize, oh, this is why sex is great, whereas girls, we're like, wait, but why? We don't – because we don't have that same immediate –
the same need. Yeah. Although come to find out that men – my listeners are men that I get – more than half.
Really?
It's just like you're dating on your other podcast. Like people, yes, men and women don't have any sex education. Our bodies change over time. Men want to know, like, is my penis too big, too small? I can't orgasm. I orgasm too much, too quickly. Porn, how do I turn her on? I mean, we're all confused because we didn't learn. So when I, going back to your question, I started it because I knew there, I wanted to learn and that I knew that You got to be passionate about what you're doing. So I figured I'm going to throw myself into becoming an expert at this. And then it started out just having a bunch of people on my show from all walks of life. And that was 13 years ago when I started the podcast. And then I went back to school and got my doctorate in human sexuality. And so that's how it all started. And I love what I do.
That's awesome. And you're so good at it.
Thank you.
And I can't believe that podcasts were around 13 years ago.
I know.
Holy shit.
It was the first, month of podcasting. And wow. I had an intern at the time. And she was, I just finished my documentary and she was like, and it was so hard making a film. I was like, I just liked interviewing people. Why can't I just do that? I love opening up and hearing people's stories. And we started to do some weird cable access show in San Francisco. I used to live in San Francisco.
All cable access is weird.
They're all weird, but I'm like, anyone can have one. So we went to the training and we're like, we're going to do Searching for Sex in San Francisco. And I was like, but I don't want to get wear makeup and go on camera. And she's like, podcast. I was like, great. We hired someone on Craigslist, recorded it, and then posted it in 2005.
So it just took off. People started listening.
Yeah. People were like, sex, I'm down. Because I think the reason why it resonates, the podcast, is because people, again, they want to know if they're normal.
Yeah.
They want information and they don't want to feel judged. They don't want to be lectured at. And it has to be entertaining and it has to be informative. And I'm not judgmental. It's very authentic. It's very real. And I love helping people. And I think people know that. And we all learn from each other still. So, you know, the podcast is a lot of questions and we get callers, but also guests. So it's kind of a little bit of everything. And
You know what? I almost don't want people to get better at sex because I don't want more people on this planet. I don't want to populate this place with more assholes.
That's true.
Let's keep people bad at sex. Right, let's keep it mediocre. We'll keep the population low.
But they'll still keep having sex. So
they will. That's what's crazy.
They will.
Yeah.
And so tell me about, because people aren't using enough protection. What about, why were you so awkward around sex? What was it? Or why was it so?
You know, I still kind of look back and try to figure out what is it exactly? Is it who I am innately? Am I just like a dweeby, uncomfortable person? Or is it because there was zero signs of sexuality in my house? My parents didn't kiss. You know, if a sex scene came on in a movie, it was like, cover your eyes. This is uncomfortable. And I'm Catholic. Right. And yeah, I mean, the combination makes sense, but I don't ever really know if it's more just who I am, like in here, or if it's those outside factors. I've gotten more comfortable. I'm 34 now. So right. I've gone, okay, it's time to like drop the I'm a 12-year-old boy thing and start being a woman. And
right,
so
I get it.
I'm becoming okay with it, but even saying be comfortable being a woman makes me uncomfortable. Yeah. So, and it's not that it's weird too, because I'm not gay. I'm not like a transgender, you know, it's not like I'm trying to figure out, am I a boy? I'm definitely a girl. I love dudes. I'm super turned on by men. I like the idea of sex, but then when I put it in like the way I can compare it is like so I'm very particular about what color nail polish I put on because it doesn't really match my skin tone. A lot of colors. So, and right now my nails are really bad, but
Mine are too. I'm picking them.
It's so hard to keep up with that. It's like 5 days all of a sudden. And I hate getting the gel because it ruins your nails. Yeah, I know.
I've been going through the whole thing.
Yeah. So anyway, with the, with the weird analogy I'll make with this is that when I put on the wrong color, I feel like in my mind, I feel like, I look like an actual freak with the wrong color nail polish on. And I think I look almost like a, and I hate to compare this to a freak, but in my mind, I feel like I look like a man wearing women's nail polish if it's the wrong color. It's really weird what it does in my brain.
Yeah.
And so when it comes to, like being a woman, I feel like sometimes I don't have the, I feel like a monster. Like, it's
being
weird. I see myself wrong.
There was something probably like, and it's not even about who, you know, nature, nurture. It's all those things, but there probably was something at one point. And this happens for all women. So you said there's no vagina in your household. There's no vaginas in a lot of households. Like, think about when you're little girls.
That's a really good
and
quote.
And your daughter's like, your mom's like doing the coochie coo and you're a baby and you're sitting there, you're like two or three and she's naming the body parts. And she's like, here's your knees and your thighs and your belly button, right? Yep. And they skip right through. And
right.
You're like, there's no name for this thing.
Right.
Like, there's the, or it's the vajayjay, whatever they call it.
Right.
Or it's your little private place. And then 4 years later, maybe, or 5 years, you touch yourself inappropriately. And then your parents are like, that's dirty. Go in your bedroom. So you're like, okay, it's private and it's dirty.
Right.
So we're not even taught how to be in our bodies.
Well, I didn't know this wasn't normal until I started doing my other podcast, Ask Women. I thought all moms or all little girls referred to their vaginas as their middle. That's what we call it.
No.
In our house, we call it her middle. So like my mom, so like I have a niece, so my mom would be like, oh, well, her middle's bothering her. And so she still says it. And
wow.
So I thought that was normal.
No.
And
vagina.
Then, no.
It's the vagina.
It's the vagina. So now it's really funny because my boyfriend, I'll like be like, you know, just refer to it as my middle.
Right.
And
does
so
he
it's
sex
like a
you
joke.
Like, baby, I can't wait to come pound your middle.
Yes. No, we really make really amazing jokes about the middle.
Right. I love it. But it's true. But that's why. So you never had that. And then also being the practice of just being, when you said you skipped over it, it's like, it's more like just practice. It's about being, learning to like, through masturbation, being and getting comfortable with your body. So
yeah.
Many women aren't because of, they've had sexual trauma or because they, you know, are depressed or because they're anxious. Like I'm convinced that the reason why I never thought to masturbate were like, I have all the parts. Like,
yeah.
I was like a lot of little girls are like, oh, when I was 6 years old, I was taking a shower and I all of a sudden discovered orgasm. I was riding a horse.
Six years old.
Yeah. I had more orgasm. People. Yeah. Girls have orgasms
what?
At like eight, seven.
What?
Yeah. They're like, I was riding a horse and oh yeah. And I was like, I rode horses. I took showers.
Right.
I did not have an orgasm.
I had a bicycle.
Everything. Bicycle. But I think I had a lot of anxiety growing up, like tumultuous childhood, who didn't, but I think I just didn't think to connect. So,
right.
So for me, that was a big thing. So getting comfortable. So I think what helps with self-confidence and feeling sexy is like when you masturbate and learn what makes you feel good. And it helps with confidence in the bedroom. And there's a lot of different things.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess I'm sitting here and want to like help you with everything. I'm like, how can we help her feel?
I know.
Embodied,
I know. Well, then to add to it, the foundation I had was bad. And then on top of it, being a depressed person and either not having a sex drive from not having or from having depression or also being on antidepressants.
Yeah. That kills it too.
Which is a huge deal.
And so, birth control pills. They never tell you.
They really? I didn't know birth control could
for
do that.
For a lot of girls, birth control pills can affect their libido. They can have pain during sex. They don't know it. So this is all the messed up things that happen to women is that your doctor says, here, go on the pill. You never think to change it. And then you go on antidepressants and they don't tell you that you might not want sex and kids go on, in college and stuff. And then you're just like, oh, I just don't like sex. So then we start to define ourselves and label ourselves as someone who doesn't like sex.
Yeah. Well, I didn't lose my virginity until I was 25. And so the entire time I was in college and I was very depressed in college. I wasn't on antidepressants yet, but I was super depressed.
Right.
And I had zero, I didn't care. It was like you said earlier, like I didn't get why people were so interested in it because I didn't desire it at all. So I was like, I don't really get what the big deal is and why people are so obsessed with this thing.
Yeah.
Okay. I enjoy watching movies. That's where I get off. Like dirty ones,
right,
but like actually like good movies. Like that to me is pleasure. And so I didn't have one, the desire and two, I think the ability to even you know, want to explore
right,
it.
Exactly. But then you did, but then you came around and you wanted to have sex.
Yeah. And right. I think I did because it was like, okay, I'm 25 and this is getting weird.
Right.
It's getting now like, I'm going to start freaking people out. And I do get concerned with what people think of, you know, like, I don't want to, because I did want a boyfriend. Or I did want to date around and I right. didn't want guys. First of all, the fact that that was a thing that I'd never had sex made me very uptight on a date or dating guys right. because I was, number one, afraid to tell them. And two, I didn't know how to proceed if it was going to happen because I'd never done it before.
Right.
So it was like just anxiety around the whole thing.
Which I think is so relatable.
Yeah.
So many men and women I think are like, they think that, because there's all these shoulds around sex. Like, we should have had it earlier. We should be more experienced. I hear from virgins right now freaking out, like that are 19 and they're like, oh my God, am I going to do it right? Like, we all wonder, yeah. are we going to be yeah. right? Are we going to be perfect? How do you do sex? It's like, you learn by doing it. No one expects you to be perfect at any age. You just, but you don't know that.
You don't
you
know that.
Whole world.
But now I think, unless I'm wrong, but I feel like now it's like, oh, you just have a vagina. That's, you don't have to really do any, I mean, of course there's more you can do,
right.
but as a girl who's first starting out, you don't really have to do anything to do, be good.
Right.
The guy will be fine. You know, it's your first time and you have a hole. That's all
yeah,
he's worried
exactly.
about.
Exactly. You got and the then, hole. Check, check.
Right. right. And then as you get older, of course, then you or move yeah. on in your sex life, you can yeah. get, you know, more experience and more fun and adventurous and all that stuff. But in terms of depression and sex, I know that so people will write to me and they'll say, how do you date with depression? Or like, what do you tell someone you're dating that you have to, you know, when do you tell them? How do you tell them? Are people going to run away from me when they find out I have depression? So that's one thing.
That's a really good question, yeah.
And then on top of it, what if I don't really want to have sex? Are people going to want to be in a relationship with me? And so sex is important.
It is.
So how would people,
yeah, no,
you know, help that situation?
Well, I think it's really important to be open about whatever you, you know, struggle with in a relationship, you know, whatever your things are,
yeah.
mental illness or challenges. And I think it's not the kind of thing you have to like bring out on a first date. Just like, I don't think, yeah, you don't need to get so, I mean, I'm not a rule person either.
Yeah.
If
yeah,
you
yeah.
do, that's great. But I think get to know the person. It's part of who you are. Like everyone, and you realize like the more honest you are, everyone has something like everyone. So I think being honest about how you're managing and not just like, I'm depressed. I'm in bed. I haven't gone out of the house for a month.
Exactly.
If you're in that stage of depression, you probably shouldn't be dating right now. But if you like have your depression managed and you're, you know,
working on it.
You get it. You're working on it. Yeah. I think it's cool to be honest and say, this is where I'm at. This is where I've been. This is how I'm managing, dealing with it. But the thing about antidepressants and sex, the SSRIs will impact your sex drive. You will not want to have sex for many people. It can kill your drive.
Make it hard to get an erection?
Makes it hard okay. to get an erection. Yeah. It can make it hard to ejaculate.
Yeah.
And desire. Like desire and arousal are very different. So you don't even have the desire.
It's weird too, because you think it, what I was thinking in my mind was like, before I knew anything about antidepressants, I thought, well, if I'm no longer depressed, then I'll be happy. Then I'll want to have sex. Because if I go on antidepressants, that's supposed to be the cure. And then you go on antidepressants and you get quote unquote like happier or better or not better, but you're in a more stable state and you still don't have a sex drive. And you're like, but
right.
I'm
it's
in
like,
the mind
it's like
frame.
A cool joke for
it
the universe.
Is.
Like, hi, guess what? You won't want to kill yourself anymore.
Right.
Here's a pill. You're
right.
going to be super happy. Everything's great. Oh, but by the way, you're not going to have sex.
Right.
It's like, can't have
so
it all.
So that can send you back into a depression.
Absolutely. And so that's why I think it's really important to stay in close contact with your doctor, because you can play with your meds. Like, I've gone through this before. I haven't. I feel like, personally and with a lot of, you know, just listeners over the years, it's like, you really have to let your doctor know, because just be, and also I think the thing with depression is that we talk to, God, it's the same thing in everywhere, diet, nutrition, health. Yes, you can get recommendations from friends, but since our bodies are different, our minds, we all like depression doesn't look the same in everyone. The diet that everyone needs, our nutrition is different in everybody. So you really got to like pay attention. So if you go to a doctor and you feel like your libido is, you're like, okay, I'm taking this and it's, you no longer want to have sex. You can't have orgasm. You go right back to your doctor and they tinker it. It's like a cocktail and they play with it. They're like, okay, well, we'll go down on this antidepressant. We'll add this.
Right.
And so I think if it's important to you, you manage your meds so you can, you know, and there's also a lot you can do, which we can get into to kind of get yourself back in the game. Cause there are people who assume that, God, there's a lot here that I haven't thought about in a while, but like you assume that in the beginning, the side effects can be a lot stronger. But once you're on a med for a while, your body can start to adapt to it in a good way, whereas where you weren't having drive before or you weren't able to orgasm, now you can. So I think our minds get locked into, oh my God, it's not working. So just pay attention as well, because there are different ways you can work around it. And so one is talking to your doctor and saying, this isn't working. What can you add in? What can we take away? You know, can we do a lower dose? But then also with masturbation, with a partner using toys. I mean, I use toys anyway. Like, I'm a huge fan of sex toys, but like, if you can't, or like, sex toys are a great addition to any sex life.
So how so? Because I'm like, as a nerd that I am, I don't really know sex toys.
I think you'd love it. We're going to go into my sex toy class.
I know dog toys and baby toys.
Cool. Right. Exactly.
But not sex toys.
But sex toys. So the thing about sex toys are, and they're so different now than they were in the past. I think people were like, oh, this is – a lot of men were like, this toy is going to replace me and it's going to do all these things. But for so many women, even if you're having like just regular like intercourse, right, PV sex as we call it, like penis vagina sex. Okay. Only 30% of women can have orgasms during intercourse, whether you're on an antidepressant or not.
Wow.
That's the fact. 30%.
It's a scary number.
It's a scary number, and it's scary only because we're never told otherwise. We see TV and we see porn and every woman has an orgasm.
Right, and they're screaming and it's made right.
And they're yelling and it has nothing to do with reality. And I'm like, he's nowhere near her clitoris. There's no way she's having this orgasm. Yes, there's G-spot orgasm. But what I'm saying is that when you add a little vibration to the mix, it just, I mean, you can be having sex with your partner and you use like a little bullet vibe. Like, I love the Wii Vibe Touch. I can show you some of these toys, but you put them over your clitoris and it's like, you will have, it's pretty much a sure thing. You'll have an orgasm.
Wow.
And it's not inauthentic. It's like, the penis does not vibrate.
Right. Unless he's drank way too much caffeine and then had sex.
Exactly. Way too much caffeine, you know? Or you can use like a penis ring. Like, there's vibrating rings that he could wear on his penis. Vibrations feel great for men too. And then he can wear that. It helps him stay harder longer. And then you can also get on top of him or wherever. It's got a little ring on it that looks like it has a vibration in it, so it hits your clitoris. So there's all these different things that kind of help with getting your mind in the game. And for women, our brain is the largest sex organ. So for women who are struggling with like any depression or antidepressants and they're like, why aren't I turned on? Why don't I want sex? Sometimes you've got to like work at it. And I know it sounds like the least sexiest thing in the world. Like, I should just want sex. It should just be magical all the time. It's not. Even if you're not depressed, I'm telling you, most of my business, I've been doing this for 13 years. I get hundreds of emails from people who no longer want to have sex with their partners. They're not feeling sexy. So wherever you are the reason why you don't want sex, there are things you can do to get it back in the game. And since our brain is the largest sex organ for women, especially, the more you think about sex and the more you keep sex top of mind, so you take time to masturbate, you take a bath, you touch your body, you get it in your, you know, in your consciousness that you are a sexual
being. So even if you're not feeling it and like you're just like blah,
going to the gym.
The
hardest part is getting out the door,
but you're glad you did it.
You're never like, why did I go to the gym?
Right.
And you're never like, why did I masturbate? But then you start to think, oh, that was hot. And then your brain's in the game. And so it just, these are things that you got to like force yourself, but you guys, I'm forcing you to have orgasms. Like, it's not so bad. So,
It's not like forcing you to take out the garbage.
But toys make it just more fun. It's easy. It's different sensations. You can reach different parts of your body that you can't normally. And so I think that that's a big part of it. And the thing about orgasms is it, you know, boosts your serotonin, your dopamine. It actually is really healthy to have more orgasms for men and for women, whether you're in a relationship or out of a relationship. It's always really healthy to masturbate.
Yeah. It seems like if you can get the train rolling, once it's rolling, it's rolling.
Right.
It's just getting it to roll is fucking hard because it's this big train that it's rusty. It hasn't moved in 30 years.
Yeah.
But once it's on the track, it's like, oh, it's stretching its legs again. It feels,
Exactly. It's just like that. And then you realize, oh, I want it more. I'm more into it. It will just happen. So I would say just start doing it and it's fun.
What about, say a guy is listening and his girlfriend has depression. How does he introduce that to her and say like, hey, I know you're feeling down, but here are some toys that'll make you,
it's
how do you do that?
I would say, well, first of all, I love it. If a guy's listening to this or people do this on my podcast all the time, they'll be like, So I was listening to this podcast, Sex with Emily. I was listening to Mentally Chill with Kristen.
That's a good intro. Yeah.
She had a guest on. And I don't know, babe, I love you and I care about your depression and let's go sex toy shopping together. So I would not, I would never recommend
just showing up,
just showing up with toys. Cause first of all, maybe she has some, maybe she's got issues with them. Maybe she knows what she likes already and who knows. So you just want to have the talk first, you know? Yeah. And so I think that toys can be enhanced intimacy. It's something that you're trying together because when sex becomes challenging in a relationship or stale or boring, as it will in long-term relationships, you guys are not alone if that's happened to you. It happens in every relationship. How you spice it up is kind of like sharing a new experience together. So by saying like, I don't know, I've never tried a toy of you. Let's go to Pleasure Chest or wherever you live, Hustler, Adam and Eve store, go to my website, buy some toys together, yeah. Try it out, or like use lube. Like lube is like a huge.
Really?
Oh my God. Yeah, I know.
See, why though? Like, okay. I don't, aren't women just like wet enough as
no,
it is?
And
like,
no, I love that you're at. So my dream, oh, it's not in here. We're in my office. I was like, is a lube on every nightstand? Because lube is this amazing thing that when you add lube to sex, a few drops, that it can enhance orgasm for women and for men, but especially women. There was a study done by Indiana University. It was like 80% of women were more likely to orgasm when you just add a few drops of lube because your wetness is not an indicator of arousal. For example, you could be really wet and not turned on.
Oh, I've been
there. You could
be
really turned on and not wet.
Yeah.
Changes different kind of month. It could change during your period. Nobody knows this, but people think like you do, like, oh, I don't have that problem. I'm like, so there are
men. Yeah, I just assume it's like old ladies.
Yeah, old ladies need lube. Right, exactly. But the truth is like there's great lubes now. You don't want to go to the drugstore and buy a lot of those lubes. Like I'll give you – I love System Joe lube. I'll give you some. It's like water-based. And you add a few drops before sex and you're like good to go. And
you put it on the penis, right?
You put it on the penis. You put a few drops on your clitoris.
Oh, you do. Okay. You can put it right on the lady.
Yeah. Or it can help. I've got flavored lube. Like if you're not into blowjobs, it's like not like the flavored lube you had in high school that was really bad if you ever did.
No. It wasn't like my thing in high school.
Oh, you didn't have, right.
I had lollipops in high school.
Right. Sorry. Not you.
Not me. Yeah.
But it's like gelato. So like you're going down and like a penis takes like a gelato.
It's like an Italian penis.
Exactly.
Sweet. Yeah. An Italian sweet penis.
So I just think that lube makes everything like wetter is better. During sex, so have that consistent, you know, and it also mimics to have that consistent wetness in any sex act, whether it's like oral or sex intercourse, makes it better. So people, there is a stigma because also men think she's not wet enough. I didn't turn her
yes,
on.
And yes,
I
dudes will get offended.
Change that and be like, no, dude, it has nothing. You are turning her on, but this is will make it so much better. The clitoris is not self lubricating, so guys like spit on their hands. That's not sanitary. So just like a few drops of the pump next to your bed.
Yeah, like kind of. I love how we're worrying about spit, but not the cum or the ejaculation.
Exactly. They're like,
oh, that's not sanitary, but go. Yeah, no.
Yeah, cum, right. Because lube makes it better. So I don't know how we get off from that, but lube is important. That's
yeah.
Why. Oh, because it helps with orgasm.
So
if you're challenged around orgasm because you're on meds or you're just never orgasm, we can train. Our bodies are not in a set place sexually. It is constantly changing and expanding if we want it to.
Yeah.
And I think we believe that we are one way sexually and we are not.
Do you think antidepressants can physically dry out the vagina at all? Like, are there actual physical effects like that?
You know what? They can. They can absolutely, like antihistamines too, obviously, because they can.
It's almost like I used to get dry mouth from,
yeah,
you know, whatever I was taking at one point.
Medications can absolutely have an impact on your pH balance. For yeah. Women and on your dryness, wetness,
yeah. Yeah.
Birth control pills can. There's a lot of things that could have an impact on that. So I think that then there's shame around it. So women might think, oh, I'm not getting wet enough. I don't want to have sex. So that contributes to depression. So a lot of women do get depressed when they can't perform sexually, when they can't have orgasms, they're not wet, they're not turned on. And then they add that to the other thing to beat themselves up about.
Right.
No, I can't even have sex.
I think, I don't know, but I think guys, I'm not saying guys think this about themselves, but I think maybe the general thought would be that guys get shameful about their performance, but women do as well.
Oh, yeah. It's equal opportunity.
Yeah.
Women both get super bummed out about their performance. And I just want people to know that they're like normal and we're all struggling because I think we're like socialized, especially as a woman, I was to believe that men knew everything about sex and they would figure it out. I didn't know my body, but hopefully you would.
Right.
And men had this huge pressure to to make us happy.
And it's like we're both in the car and we don't have a GPS.
Right.
And we're like, you find it. And they're like, no, but you find it. We don't know where
exactly.
we're going. I thought you had the map. No, right. you had the map.
Right. Exactly. And yeah. nobody has the fucking map.
Nobody does.
We have our own maps. And that's why I always say communication is a lubrication. Because you have got to start talking about sex.
I know. I see that sign.
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah, yeah. It's everywhere.
If communication is lubrication, I should be so wet. Because all I do is fucking talk and talk and talk and talk. People are like,
same,
shut
sister,
up.
Same, sister, same. I know, but I'm not. Sometimes I need lube. I'm going to give you some packages.
Oh, I'm excited.
And some toys.
Okay.
I love my job. Yeah, I have a whole sex toy closet going on.
Oh, that's awesome. Wow. It's quite the life. You know, it's like I come from this very small town where no one does anything out of the norm. It's you become a teacher or, you know, a secretary or whatever. And then you come to places like LA and you see people with careers like yours, which is just like, this is a job? What?
Yeah.
Which is
I love it.
Yeah.
Okay,
sometimes.
Oh, I can show you real quick. We can do a brief.
Yeah.
To the closet of the.
My God. I have to take a picture. This will be on Instagram.
Will. Anyway. So
wow.
That's the loop and the toys and the funness. So I think that when you're depressed, it could be, there's a lot of things that could contribute to it and you don't want to have sex, but just like you force yourself to, you know, when you're home in bed, you're not feeling great to eat healthy, to exercise and to have sex.
Yeah.
So you can.
Do you know what it is like in the brain that's causing someone to not want to have sex when they're either depressed or on antidepressants?
That is a really good question. God, there's so many things because it could be because the SSRIs are interfering with the receptors that make you want to have sex. So there's like,
okay.
It's all because about your receptors. So it's trying to feed you their pleasure receptors, but it's taking away from your arousal and desire, which is very different for women. The way you get, turned on is by, so for women, okay, so men and women get turned on really, really differently. I always say that men are frying pans and women are slow cookers, meaning like we get turned on, like we take a while, we need the build, we don't walk around like think about the difference. Like you, a boyfriend walk in the door and he walks in and he's super turned on. He sees you. He's like, oh my God, Kristen, you look so hot. And then he's got like a boner in the back, dick in the back or whatever. And you're like, I'm not turned
on. It's just
I'm
boom.
Sitting here like I was sitting so here fast. Finishing an email. I was listening to a podcast. What are you talking about?
Right.
Because they see you and they have the visual and they have the response and they're aroused. So for women, we used to always think that it should be that we felt inferior because we're like, well, my partner came in and I wasn't aroused in that way.
Yeah.
And I don't desire sex in that way. So it's like the whole thing difference between so we might even desire sex, but we don't get aroused. So for women, that's what I'm saying, like we need to be worked up a little bit. Like we need, like I also say foreplay, you know, oh, it doesn't say there. Foreplay is a suggestion, a requirement, not a suggestion.
I read that on your Instagram the other day.
We really do need that. Like we really do need to be turned on in different ways. So there's a whole misunderstanding between the sexes that we should all respond to sex in the same way. So if you're depressed and your brain is just in this, you know, negative loop and you're feeling bad about yourself, it's going to be really hard to muster up that strength to get into like pleasure zone, right? Because you don't see any pleasure. But I'm saying you got to start thinking about sex and touching yourself and having the motivation. So you can overcome it, but it's going to take a little bit more work.
Well, we always hear that guys think about sex like 5,000 times a day.
Right.
And whereas, like you said earlier in the show, how you need to think about sex as a woman.
Right.
And so that makes so much sense that the dudes are going to be aroused immediately because it's been on their mind, on their mind. They don't even know it's on their mind. Just boom, right. Boom, boom, on their mind. And then we're like, you know, we're thinking about like our nail polish
exactly.
and our career and
the
whatever else.
Most women are thinking about their
yeah.
to-do list. And the other thing that actually just reminded me of is that for women, it's not even just, it is thinking about it, but soon after we think too much. So it's almost like I want you to think about it to the point where you're actually doing something about it, like you're masturbating or you're watching porn or you're touching yourself. And then I don't want you to get out of your head and I want you to get into your body. So the challenge with women and men, but more women I hear from is that we are so disconnected from our bodies. It's like we are like we are like chest, you know, neck up.
Mm-hmm.
We've got our thoughts. And then beneath us, we have the midsection. What does your mom call it?
The middle.
The middle. And we're so disconnected from our vaginas and we don't even know what's going on down there. So there's a really great practice of just breathing into your pelvic floor. And like during sex, a lot of us hold our breath. But when you start to, in the moment you're having sex, if you feel like you're not turned on or you're not into it, like, or you're thinking about your to-do list, you're wondering why you're not turned on or orgasming yet, when you take your mind off, just kind of like meditation, off of whatever is bothering you, you go into like deep breathing, breathing into your like pelvic floor, what it feels like to have your partner's hands on your body or to be inside of you, or the senses in the room, like the candle, the music, when you kind of circulate your brain to just the real senses that can kind of help bring you back into the moment, into the sex that's actually happening rather than tripping.
That's always my favorite part of yoga class. Well, right. The laying down, of course, is my favorite. But when they say, feel your feet pressing against the floor and feel the weight of your body, or feel what is your body feeling right now? Yeah. All of a sudden I go, oh my God, I forgot. Like I've never thought about, like right now I'm sitting in this chair, feeling my weight of my back pushing into this physical object. It's very, it connects you to your body, but also to the world or the earth.
Absolutely.
And I hate to sound hippie-ish because it's so not me, but all of a sudden you feel like one with your surroundings, right. And maybe you'll feel more one with your partner.
Absolutely.
Because you're feeling, what does that feel like to have this person in your body, or that be in that person's body? Or,
and then that's what it is. We are so disconnected, and sex can be, and then you watch porn and like, they're not looking at each other and slapping around the ass.
They're disconnected from everything.
Exactly. Like that. And that's how a lot of young people are learning. I don't know what like your audience, but like younger people are learning about sex that way. And like the real, I think the best sex is when you are, for a lot of people, connected to your partner, connected to your body even. Because for women also, when I'm saying when we're disconnected from our pelvic floor, it's like I always talk about doing your Kegel exercises. Those muscles those are the muscles that you use when you stop and start the flow of urine. So if you just stop peeing because someone was like knocking on the door. So if you do those muscles, even if you just do those exercises, and you start to like pump, those are the muscles that expand and contract when you have an orgasm.
So you can do those laying down, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so if you're depressed and you're in bed, just start squeezing your vagina.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, it's true. I have an iPhone app called Kegel Camp that will remind you to do them, because having a strong pelvic floor is helpful for men and for women. But for women, I just love it because it wakes you up again. You're like getting connected to it. You're like, oh yeah, I'm alive. I'm a sexual being. But if you're disconnected and you're not pumping it down there and you're not feeling it, you're like.
Well, also the thing though with doing that type of movement into your vagina is like you realize you have control over your vagina.
Yes.
Because so much, it's almost like I would think about my vagina like my ears. Like they're just there. I can't move them. I can't wave with them. But all of a sudden you're like, wait, I can move my vagina. I have control and I can contract my vagina.
And then would you do that contraction like that you're doing? That actually is like the same muscles, like I said, with orgasm. So you're waking it up. So when I say breathe into your pelvic floor, you can't really breathe. But you're like,
I just blow on it.
Yeah, you can't. Although in Thailand, they can. They blow the balls out of their.
Oh, I have no idea what you're talking
about. Out of their vaginas.
They do?
Well, like in the sex shows, which you should not go to.
Oh my God. No, that's so funny.
I know. They can smoke cigarettes out of their vaginas.
Oh my God.
Ping pong balls.
I want to go to Thailand.
Yeah, I know. It's so fun. I mean, I was there a long time ago. But what I'm saying is, I'm not going to ask you to do that. I'm just saying, pay attention, have awareness around your body. And I think for you too, having some kind of, I love what you're saying about yoga, connecting. And the more you remember during the day that like we're all in this body and we breathe and we stop and we feel it, will also become more in touch, more embodied. I know you had your, the nutritionist on your show, is that she's even more than that, right?
Kelsey.
Kelsey.
Yeah.
And she was talking about, I'm a somatic trained sex therapist. So I've studied it. And she was talking about somatic body work.
Oh.
And she said that was her. And it was interesting because it's all about what's happening in the moment. What are you feeling in your body? And we're all disconnected in some ways. So when you can take it back into your body, you get to own it again and it helps you get more connected sexually.
Yeah. Do you think watching porn does, if you are depressed and you're just not turned on at all, can you get turned on watching porn as a depressed person?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think mind over matter sometimes. I mean, if you are matter over mind, here's the thing. My only challenge around porn is when it's the first sex that so many kids are seeing. Like by the time they're 12, they watch porn, and porn becomes the way that people are educating themselves and they think that's how they should have sex. But what I like about porn is that for so many people who aren't in their bodies and not turned on, sure, watch some porn and like get yourself in the, read erotica. That's why 50 Shades of Grey was so great. Poorly written, doesn't represent BDSM very well. But whatever it is that gets you in the mood, people listen to my podcast together or they watch a show, you know, whatever.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah. Couples like, we did a 12-hour road trip and then we pulled over and we listened to 12 episodes. I'm like, great.
Oh my God.
Like, blame me, listen to me, whatever right. you can do to get in the game. So I'm cool with porn.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think that there's any people worry that they're not having sex and it's not right. If you get yourself turned on and you bring yourself to orgasm and you feel better, you did it right.
Yeah. Can porn addiction be a mental illness? Is that a thing?
You know, it is a thing. Like, it's a thing in that, yes, though people tell you that they are addicted to porn.
Like sex addiction. Too.
Is that a thing?
Or is that like an excuse for just wanting to have
all
the sex?
Well, I don't think it's a thing for Harvey Weinstein. Like, I don't think that Harvey Weinstein is a
sex
addict.
Yeah.
I don't think that
going
cheaters,
to wherever he's going, like some rehab, is not going to help him.
No.
He's just a mean, pervy guy.
No, because he wanted to have sex with all these women.
Yeah, he likes
that's
power.
That's different. Yeah, it's like that's like toxic masculinity, like kind of shrouded in some kind of sex addiction rap. But I do think that there are people who can be addicted to, and this, here's how you know when it's addiction, just like anything. If you're addicted to porn and you realize like I can no longer, it's having a, it's having an impact on your, you have consequences. So you can no longer get out of bed and go to work anymore. Like you lose your job because you're
affecting your life.
It's affecting your life. Or you can no longer have sex with a human because you keep watching porn that keeps raising the bar of sex. You're like, I need to see a gangbang on top of this and whatever. Yeah. It gets more and more intense. And so then the stimuli that they're watching gets more intense and then it kind of alters their brain chemistry so they can no longer get off without porn. And it's not a crisis. It's a sense of like, if you're experiencing this, you just slowly taper off the porn and you bring back other things. So that is a real thing, but for just like everything's a thing, you can be a sex addict, you can, you know, create, but it all comes back to covering up other symptoms that you're trying to mask, that you don't want to feel.
Yeah. And working at things. The thing is, I always say on the show how I don't think I'll ever be cured of depression because I don't like to work hard and it takes a lot of work.
Right.
And I think the same with like, if you're having sex issues and like you want to overcome them, it takes a lot of work because like, so for me, I was on Effexor for like 5 years and no libido whatsoever, but because of my shitty insurance and like, I just didn't want to figure it out. Like I didn't want to put in the effort to go, okay, I've got to go back to the doctor and then wean off this and then wean off that. And then it's going to cost me another X amount of dollars and then maybe it won't even work. So I'll just put up with not having a sex drive and just stay on the Effexor. Right. That was like my resolution, but that's the wrong thing to do. The right thing to do is to actually put in the work and make those annoying doctor's appointments. And
yeah, I feel like you are putting in the work though.
I am now. I'm definitely working harder now.
Right.
But
it is a thing. No, I remember going through this years ago with meds and like you had to keep going back because I just realized that like your mental health, and my mom said this to me when I was going through depression and she was like, your mental health is the most important thing that you have. Because without it, you literally, and obviously your physical health, but your mental health, like you can't do anything. So when I used to complain about the cost and I used to be like, I can't afford insurance or it's too much work. It's like, and she just kind of gave me permission to make it a priority above everything else.
Yeah.
And so there were times I like couldn't work or couldn't do things because I was trying to like get through stuff. Like my dad died when I was younger, suddenly all this stuff. And I was just like, oh, so it's kind of like I needed her to say that to give me permission. But now I like to give all my listeners and all your listeners permission that like,
I love that
it actually matters. And that
I love that because I don't give myself permission on so many things. And that was something that I was like, I'm not giving myself permission to figure this out because I have all these other things I have to do. And those other things are more important.
Right. And they're not because literally without your mental health being in a good place, though, you won't be able to do those other things.
Yeah. Everyone needs to apply that to everywhere in their life.
It's
because,
so true. And everywhere.
It's like for me, the little things that aren't relevant to people listening, but I have the worst.
Try to find your quote.
Oh, go for it.
Okay, go ahead.
I have the worst bloating problems. My stomach is always bloated. I always feel like I just ate Thanksgiving dinner. And I was thinking, this is ruining my life. It is literally ruining my life because I'm already struggling to get out of bed to begin with. Then once I get out of bed, I'm so uncomfortable. I don't want to put on pants.
No, I get it.
I actually got teary eyed thinking about it yesterday. I was like, I would love to feel free from my body so that I can enjoy just going to the beach or just living.
Right.
And that's when I connect and this gets a little bit darker, but that's when I connect with like death because you're out of your body and the freeing feeling of that. And that's how bad I feel about my bloating.
The bloating.
No, and I've never given myself permission to really figure it out. So when you said permission,
you have to.
I was thinking that yesterday, how I was like, I need, other people would have made this priority in their life, but this has been since I was like 18.
Wow.
I've been so fucking uncomfortable, and every experience I have at the beach is pure misery. Every experience I have shopping for clothes, pure misery. Wow. And I'm small. I'm a small person.
Yeah, you are. You're like tiny, but you feel this, you get the bloating.
But it feels, I feel like I'm constantly trying to hold in my stomach.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating because I will literally eat nothing and my stomach will, I'll have a drop of water and my stomach will go to full, like I look pregnant.
Well, you know, what happens in our gut is really directed to our mind. There's a lot of depression and there's a lot of like, your serotonin.
Well, I've talked to Kelsey, the girl who's on the podcast. Right. I've talked to her. She's like, you might have a leaky gut. You might have a gluten intolerance. And so that's so much work trying to figure it out. And like, my insurance is shitty. So like, trying to find a good gastroenterologist is impossible. And so I'm like, I feel like I'm just like sentenced to this like misery of like, I literally want to get pregnant. So I just have an excuse of why I look pregnant. Right. So I can finally just let it hang.
Right. Honey, I want you to. Think of it like it's an investment in your future, not an expense. Like your health is an investment.
Because it's ruining the quality of my life.
Yeah.
It keeps me, it keeps my depression higher. Right. It keeps me in bed more. It just.
I know. Yeah. So start, and even if you like have a boyfriend or a good friend that can sit with you, like when I was going through a lot of stuff, it was really hard. I'd have friends come over and be like, can you just help me make these phone calls? Like I can't figure out which doctor. Like I just would have to be like, I can't write checks. I can't put stamps in envelopes.
Right.
You know, when you
that's how hard it is.
Yeah. And you're like, it's another thing. Or I would say like, I will never mail in to get the reimbursement from the insurance company. Like it just, shit's hard.
Yeah.
Paperwork. And so if you, but once you start little again, I mean, sometimes I hate this stuff, but it's like baby steps.
It is though. One it step is baby at time, steps.
But it is.
Right.
One step
it always
time.
Is. Mm-hmm. And whenever I talk to anyone or give anyone advice, which is so funny that I even give advice, but if I do, in my friend Jen, I call her resident consultant Jen for the show because she's getting her doctorate in psychology, but she's a good friend of mine. And she always jokes with me about how I say things are a mountain, but everything when you're depressed, everything's a mountain. Everything is a mountain.
Getting the mail.
Getting out of bed is a mountain. Getting the mail is a mountain. Putting stamps on anything is a mountain. Doing paperwork is a mountain.
Carrying envelopes for a week.
Yeah.
Tattered without the stamp.
Totally. Everything turns into a mountain.
Everything.
And so this bloating issue has turned into like the biggest mountain of all because it's been years and years and years and years. Wow. And I've never done anything about it.
Well, now I love the thought of you prioritizing all of this, your mental and your physical health.
Yeah.
Because you'll be so much more effective everywhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's just like doing that is so much energy. It's the mountain.
Like, I'm almost like, I love you. I want to hug you before you leave. Let's call your doctor. You know, cause I get it.
Yeah. No, it's hard. It's hard. And I mean, I have such a huge support system, especially doing this podcast. I had one before, but now it's even bigger.
I love it that you're doing this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. But I mean, sometimes this feels like a mountain doing the show. And then if you get negative feedback, if it's like makes the mountain like a slippery mountain, made of all ice, and it's like, how am I going to get up that mountain?
You're always going to get that. I just can't read, you know, I don't know. We're doing our best for good people. It doesn't, you know, the negative stuff. I don't even believe me. I know what you're saying.
My boyfriend
10 times worse than you did. So
my boyfriend says no one should ever be allowed to criticize anything unless they've done it.
Yeah.
So it's like, you can't criticize a waitress. You can't criticize a taxi cab driver. You can't criticize a podcast host. All three of which I've done. Uber, not taxi, but you can't, those things are all so hard. And so, yeah, when you do get criticized for things,
yeah, that's true.
It makes it really difficult. However, now that I've kind of gone a little off subject, I figure we'll do some segments.
Yeah. I love it.
I thought this was really fascinating. This happened in 2011 where this doctor, his name was Dr. Greenfield. He wrote this Valentine's Day piece on can semen make women happy? And there's the science, you know, behind it, which is really real. And he ended up getting like ousted from his position at the magazine and at the college that he was working at for this article. But it was based in science. He wasn't being, you know, he wasn't using toxic masculinity.
Right.
It was science, but he just wrote it in like more of a playful way.
People are like, oh, yeah, you want women to have more semen right now, don't you? Another one.
So basically, what he wrote about is that semen contains hormones that have mood boosting effects, and the seminal plasma contains estrogen, oxytocin, and a word that I really can't pronounce, prostaglandin.
Prosthetic fluid or prosthetic fluid or?
It's prostaglandins. Okay. Glands or something.
Yeah.
The estrogen and the word I can't pronounce have been linked to lower levels of depression, while oxytocin promotes social bonding. And because of the vaginal wall, you know, it can pass through it.
Right.
It will get into the bloodstream. And mm-hmm. so the studies that they did basically showed that women who have sex without condoms are less depressed than women who have sex with condoms.
Mm.
And so then the argument is there a fundamental difference between women who wear condoms and don't wear condoms? There is something also known as semen withdrawal, where women who break up with partners that they weren't having sex without condoms, they had an easier time going through the breakup than women.
Wow,
who
I've never heard of this
wear condoms.
I could understand that there might be some merit in this, but I also don't like to encourage people not to use condoms if they haven't been tested.
Absolutely.
I guess if you're in a long-term relationship, could you have semen? You'd have to have a lot of semen.
I mean, it'd
you.
Be a lot.
I mean, how much semen is going to really make it? Like they always say, like orgasms make you happy. And it is true because I realize when I don't, or like I forget to menstruate. I mean, it's like my job to menstruate. Like literally I get 20 cents here every week. I'm like, I got to think I have a team that helps me with the masturbation. Not in my house, but they take the toys home. But the point is, I do feel like orgasm really does. Like when I orgasm, I'm like, oh, yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Really.
Definitely.
But semen, like how much semen would I have to make it have a real impact on my
– probably a gajillion, a gajillion pounds worth.
Right. So. But also this thing – yeah, the study, maybe that's – I don't know. I don't know how much data they have, or I don't know if that's true or not, that the woman would be – I don't know. What they're saying that she's having withdrawal. And how would you know if it's really withdrawal from the semen or withdrawal from just because – you miss it. Like, how does the body react to a semen withdrawal?
Right. Well, they were saying they had a harder time. So the article, which you guys can read on popsci.com, it's from Popular Science, that women just struggled more with the breakup when they were not using condoms. That's all the
And how would you measure struggling more?
Right.
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 But yeah,
it's an interesting
idea. It is interesting. It is an interesting idea.
And you can definitely use it as a way to get your part. If your partner doesn't, if she's depressed, you're like, come on, you'll be happier.
It'll be happier times.
So, okay. So then we'll do who's sadder.
Okay.
So who is sadder, porn stars or reality stars?
That's a tough one. I'm not like a choose side because I can see the darkness in both and the
absolutely.
Lightness. My first thing is going to be reality stars because porn stars are doing it by choice. And I think that people have a bad – porn stars kind of get a bad rap. And okay, that sounds wrong. It's not like
it's more like – the person going into porn.
Into porn. They're not such a sad, like,
they were they sad
it.
Going into porn?
Yeah, no, I don't they think weren't. So. Some people think there's really sad going into porn. I think that people get into reality shows.
Sad porn is the only way I can get off.
Sad porn.
If they're crying during sex, I'm like, oh, I'm so hard. No.
Porn for depression.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone's like going to their doctor. The doctor's like, I won't give you a refill.
Yeah.
But I don't know. That's so hard for me to like put generalizations. It's like not my job.
See, that's what I do. That's all I do is generalize.
Oh, I don't. I can't. So my first thing was like, no, because I know a lot of porn stars are like, they choose it, they're into it, and when they don't want to do it anymore, they don't want to do it. But whereas reality stars, all of a sudden, like a successful reality star, maybe they're thrust into the limelight and then they keep comparing themselves to others and they're on this track and they feel like they're not good enough and so maybe they get more sad because life changes so quickly or doesn't or they
– I would say reality stars are sadder.
That's
I would.
What I'm saying.
I would because with porn stars, what I would guess – with porn stars or generalize, which is what I love doing. What I would guess is that they're so committed to just being whoever they're going to be that they're like, I'm going to be a fucking porn star. I'm not going to apologize and I'm going to do it.
Right.
I may be sad. Like maybe I had daddy issues. Maybe I don't, but I am who I am and I'm going to do porn. Whereas a reality star seems like they're just searching desperately for some sort of fame or approval or recognition for really nothing.
Right.
Whereas they're not going to own that. Whereas I think a porn star would own it.
Yeah, you're like, absolutely right.
I'm
that's
a fucking
a good
porn
distinction.
Star.
Right. Porn stars are choosing and reality stars are like, who am I? And I got to always be this way or present myself in a way that I'm not. So you're not being authentic, perhaps.
Right. And you're trying to play it up with who you really aren't. You're trying to heighten your personality, but you're really actually very dull, you know? So where, you know, and actually I think there's been more not more because I don't know of any porn star murders really, but there have been a couple reality stars that have like murdered people.
Yes, they've been murdered and they've also had more divorces and stuff.
Yeah. 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 So I would go reality star.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so too.
Yeah.
I think you're right. Okay. If I had to choose, I would choose
if
that.
If you had to be an asshole and choose.
Yeah. Yeah.
Congratulations, reality stars.
So yeah, I'll do it.
Okay. Perfect.
It's fun.
Okay. And then the last one for you is a would you rather.
Mm-hmm. I'm in.
So would you rather have no libido for the rest of your life, but have amazing health and an amazing life?
Mm-hmm.
Or would you rather have a super, super high libido, but some chronic illness your entire life that would make life really difficult?
Oh my God.
But you can't ever come again in the first one. Like there's no.
I can't come in the first one.
Yeah.
I always want to be able to come.
Yeah.
So whatever it is, I want to be able to have an orgasm. But you said no arousal.
Libido.
Oh, no desire. Because that's like not having like a desire for sex. I would want the one where I can have more orgasms.
The chronic illness.
I guess so. Yeah. As long as I can still have orgasms.
Hey, that says a lot about your passion for sex. And that's a good thing because you work in sex.
I do. Like it matters. And I know that couples who don't have sex and people who delay sex, they think, oh, I'll get back to it once kids are grown or once I'm happy again. And you wait for the desire to come to you. Those people, like that life is not as happy. So I feel like you can always find time for sex and orgasms.
You'd rather live well, even if it's short.
Yep. I don't care if I want to die, but you know, take me down having lots of orgasms.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. Okay. Well, this was really fun.
Thanks for doing it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm glad that I did it. I feel like.
Do you feel good now?
I do. Because it was making me so nervous. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
and now how do you feel? Do you feel?
I feel good. I feel like I just had an orgasm.
Perfect. And you're going to leave us the toy and some lube.
Mm-hmm. So I will actually have one.
I know. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on. Yeah. This was super fun.
Thank you.
So you guys can check out Emily's stuff. Where can they find you?
SexWithEmily is my .com is my podcast. You can download it wherever you're listening to podcasts and it's at SexWithEmily and everywhere across social media. And I love hearing from you and answering any questions you have around sex and relationships. You can email me feedback@sexwithemily.com.
Do you have a lot of dudes kind of crossing the line with you because of the title? I mean, I love the title, Sex with Emily. It's so
like
catchy.
In life, they come up to me like, hey, babe. Yeah, yeah, I guess so. But not as much anymore because I feel like I've been doing it for so long.
You're
that
so
I kinda
established.
I know who those dudes are. Yeah, I know who those dudes are going to be. Like, oh, I just want to have sex with Emily.
Right.
If I can check it off my list.
Right.
Now. But I think in the past, I probably did.
People are hitting me up all the time because of depression. They're like, I want to have sex with you. You are so depressed and sad.
I'm
you're going to be great in the bedroom. I can tell you're going to be wild.
You must get that.
I'm a dead fish.
You're hot little depression.
So check out Emily's stuff. And remember, you guys can support the show on patreon.com/mentallychill. I would love to see you there.
Support her on Patreon. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
She's awesome and doing really hard work. Even though she says she doesn't work hard, she's working
her ass off. I do work harder than I let on.
She cares a lot about you guys.
I do. And I'm very communicative. So if you guys write to me and stuff, especially through Patreon, if you support the show on Patreon, we'll be best buds. So Patreon.
So helpful. You're doing a good service.
Thank you. And I never imagined in my life I would be, but here I am.
Is that how life is?
I moved to Hollywood to become a good person.
Yeah.
What?
It can happen.
Weird. Okay. So patreon.com/mentallychill. And remember, stay sad enough to listen, but not too sad. Bye.